About five, and
about
all
five
of them were below 20, 20 and below. So, like, when you see...
Any failures?
No, please. I'm grateful that there's been none. But when you see people around their age committing suicide, David, it gets hard. Because then you know that this could be my friend, or this could be somebody that I care about. So then it does get hard on me, knowing that sometimes I feel like you not. I know I'm not the only person, and because I have my mom, she's a social worker, so I ask my friends if it's okay if I share it with my mom, and she helps me to carry the burden. That's why I tell you I'm grateful for the family I have, because I won't be able to do it alone. But it's the fact that a lot of them can't speak to their parents, because, and even if they try, it is the idea, the old school mentality, that you just ask, begging for attention, or you just, and I just want to encourage parents to take a step back and understand that we are more complex than just what you see on the surface. And this is not a normal environment for anybody to be living in. So don't take it for granted if somebody is asking for help. Please, okay. Parents, especially, pay attention.
Well, I want to say to you that we have alluded to this problem in this program and elsewhere in the media, because while the country has spent a lot of time looking at physical aspects associated with COVID, this mental health and emotional side of it, we must agree that, you know, the way that we are structured as a country generally, it tends to get less attention. And I do agree with you that there's a lot of scope for us to look at it, especially now. We're now reopening the country as best as we can. We wait and see where that takes us. But in the meantime, there are people who've been suffering since last year when we shut down in March, April last year. And you have touched on a number of the factors that could drive people into depression, even just the inability to keep your grades up, and you've lost loved ones, and you basically, people have lost their jobs, and there's a high degree of uncertainty out there. Let me ask you though, are you working?
No, I lost my job at the beginning of COVID. Yeah, I lost my job in March last year, and I haven't been able to get another one since.
Okay. And what ultimately is your objective? Where do you want to go?
Personally, I love children, and I want to be a teacher. I did a play, but obviously this is probably a hard thing to become a teacher, I guess. I want to go into business. I love helping. So I wanted to, because I'm good at cosmetology as well, so I wanted to also do that part-time. I don't know how I will balance it, but it's something I also want to do. So I'm trying to see if I could probably get certified as a cosmetologist in the meantime while I wait to get into a career in teaching. But teaching, I believe, is the first thing I really want to do.
Well, I want to say thank you very much for what is really a pretty touching contribution. And it shows that, you know, there are so many people in this country like you who don't necessarily call a call-in program or make public how they feel about this. And this is, you didn't call about yourself. You called to say to the rest of the community, just stop and realize that young people out there are hurting in this very difficult environment. Truth be told, even parents are hurting, and many parents don't know how to grapple with it. So apart from the idea of the hotline, Barbados really needs to talk more about a more comprehensive approach to supporting families and people generally. Because you don't necessarily want to wait until you reach the point where you're suicidal. But we need to have perhaps more volunteers, people like yourself may be able to do that, and to organize, to have people functioning as volunteers to counsel those who are going through these difficult periods. Because many people call and say, I have nothing to eat and I have no job and that sort of thing. But that's only one part of it. You can even provide food. But having provided food, there is still that void. There's still that deficiency that people are carrying. So yeah. I again want to thank you very much. I hope that just talking here today would help to relieve some of the burden that you yourself have been undergoing as a 23-year-old. It's a lot that you are personally taking on. And we are encouraged that you point out to us that you have a mother and a father who are highly supportive, and they help to reduce some of this burden, you know?
Yeah.
You fall into the category of what they will call the Good Samaritan.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And have a wonderful day.
David?
Yes.
I just wanted to say one quick thing. In addition to what you highlighted about everyone and what you said as a suggestion, I also want to add to that we need to work aggressively against the stigma of mental health and let people understand that mental health disorders, there are challenges, yes, but it doesn't make you less than a human, and it is nothing to be ashamed of because we all need help at times. And really pushed home that message that asking for help for your mental problems or whatever it is that you're going through, it is okay. In fact, it is better to ask for help, and also to push to the general population, you know, don't be stigma even with the mental health hospital in Black Rock. We need to curb that because that is a resource that we have. It's a blessing that we have that there's people who are working to help those who are mentally challenged, right? And not everyone that goes in there is completely disoriented, right? So to break the stigma so people can feel a little freer, education, maybe more programs can be had where the discussion is had, like you said, more volunteers and more outreach. That's something that I really strongly advocate for. So that's all I wanted to say. And thank you for hearing me.
Well, you said quite a lot. And let me share this with you. This person said, this young lady is real and true, for indeed, I have a guy from Grisette's housing area who had 3 COVID cases in his house of 7. He tells me the same thing. You see, there's an average of 6 persons living in the same little space, and outdoors used to provide for them to decrease the space. When that is closed, you get what she is saying. Can you relate to that?
Yeah. I didn't understand the last part, what you said.
It's basically suggesting that when you live in these closed spaces, quite a number of people in very small houses and units, it also adds to the pressure when they can't get outside. And being in on lockdown key points also helps to create the pressure that builds on these people.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there are a lot of things that can trigger you. And sometimes it is the inability to have execute your free will. And, you know, yes, lockdown, I don't have any qualms with lockdown. The only problem that I do have is it directly goes against the basic need for freedom, right? And not in a bad way. It's necessary to bring down the numbers. I completely agree. But something else needs to be put in place. One of the things I did was with these same friends, I would call them on Zoom and we would have makeup parties or just something to keep us social because we are social people. So when you get crowded in one space with seeing the same people, sometimes these are even people who may be abusive. These are people who may be triggers for you. These are the same people. If you have a mental health disorder, they might bully you because unfortunately some people who do have these things are bullied, and you are forced now for a month or 2 weeks or however long to live with these people. It could add to the pressure. So I totally agree with that. Sometimes it don't even take that much, just being in a house when you're already frustrated with things personally. And then this other person is frustrated with their things, and you don't have the avenue for good communication in that house, communication will break down and problems will arise, and it can cause a lot of strain on your emotions. It can cause strain on your mental space, and it can create a problem where there once wasn't. So yeah, I agree. There's so much need. It's almost as important as bread in this community that, like, we need it as much as we need food. To have that avenue to relieve the pressure that is on our minds and on our emotions is so important. And I believe you don't even have to be suffering with depression or anything to need to talk about the things you're going through and need somebody to understand. It's like basic. And yeah, I agree.
Well, I'm asking you, if you got a few more minutes, just stay with me while I take some calls. Because I think that, you know, your presence here could be useful in interacting with some other people who are thinking along similar lines. This is a subject that is seldom discussed in the country. It tends to be on the back burner. The culture of Barbados is one where mental health is stigmatized, or poor mental health is stigmatized. And therefore, let's take the opportunity that you have presented us with to hear what other people may be saying on this. We're not necessarily going to lock the program down to this exclusively, but let's see whether others can make a contribution that you may be interested in. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Do you want to give me your first name?
First name is Amanda.
Amanda. Okay, so it's Amanda. Hi. Good morning. Hello. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hi, my name is Alwi, and yes. I'm calling about my father, who's suffering from dementia. And yes. I've flown over from the UK to sort out some care for him. Last year, he was, in 2018, he was diagnosed with dementia, and in the UK. Now, I received a call or a notification that he was wandering the streets of Warrens last year. And this was in the early of last year. And it was from a guy called Kamal Safri. He put it up on Facebook. And my sister, I contacted Kamal, and he informed me that the Barbados police had found my dad wandering the streets of Warrens. And so I contacted the Barbados police, and I spoke to one of the superintendents, and he told me that he was worried about the situation because he had spotted my father. Well, his officers had taken my father into care twice for wandering the streets in Warrens. And so I agreed that I would come over and to see if I could organize some care. Now, my father, was diagnosed in 2018. He returned to the Barbados in 2016. And when I arrived there, he's married, and his wife is not feeling too well as well. I asked the police for this assistance because I didn't know where I could get some assistance. And he gave me some information from some doctors and so on. And also he appointed one of his officers to the home care unit, the elderly or the family affairs unit, to have a consultation or an interview to see how they were getting, to assess them. And we found that his wife, she's also suffering from a mental illness as well. Not she's old, but she's not, she's corpus mentis. She's pretty much switched on, but she is deteriorating. I mean, my father's in his 80s and she's in her 70s, so they're both trying to get along. But where the system is, I found that both of them are not faring too well. He's lost a considerable amount of weight, and she has lost a considerable amount of weight. In actual fact, I would say he's emaciated. And you could see that he's lost. You could actually see his bones. I watch him, and he's not eating. And when I came around and visited him, he was walking around in his underpants. Or the first two times I saw him, he wasn't walking around in his underpants. He wasn't wearing underpants.
May I ask you, who is taking care of the two of them?
No one. That's why I'm from here.
No one.
No one.
Ask you this question, because I think it is clear to us that if you have the two of them, together, with no one looking after them.
My sister was here for 6 months last year in Barbados when we was aware for the situation when we was notified and aware of the situation, and she found difficulty in trying to liaise with his wife, and she found that the wife didn't want any care. The water was cut off, the bills was cut off, the electricity was cut off. So therefore, she paid those bills. Yeah, she found that there wasn't shopping inside the house, so she decided to administer and start to do the shopping for them. All right.
Okay. So we are at a point in this situation where ideally they need to get some assistance. One would anticipate that in these circumstances, the family would be paying somebody to come into the home to assist them. And the difficulty here is that the wife is saying no to this idea. Where do you go from here?
That's correct.
This is the question. Yeah.
That is the question. Because obviously she's not, when I went around there, when they're going to have something to eat and you find that she's just serving one jackfish on a plate for him and her, and would you like some yourself? And so I sat down and eat one jackfish. I'm saying something is not right here. The water's not on. The water's been cut off. And I'm saying to me, my sister paid for the water last time she was here. So I'm saying, well, what is happening here, you know?
Well, to me, what I'm hearing here is one of those situations where it is dangerous to leave people to themselves. It seems to me that ideally this is something that needs to be referred to the authorities for some further investigation. Because if you don't do this, then both of them are exposed to vulnerabilities. And there is every possibility that your father could be on the street again because of the dementia, or something worse can happen easily. So my question to you is whether you spoke to anybody in the system to find out what is possible. What did they tell you?
I went to see a doctor in Wildey, Dr. Ambrose, and he was willing to come out. I had a consultation with him, and he said, well, he can't come out. He would come out, and he's willing to come out, but he finds that if he's come out, he has the wife has to be a willing participant for him to attend.
Look, this is a matter that appears to me may have to be tackled at one or of two levels. One, there's got to be some government agency that can advise you on that. And alternatively, you may need legal advice as to how you are going to be able to tackle this problem. Because the central issue is that the wife does not appear to be suffering from dementia. You've said that she's quite alert. She's capable of thinking for herself. And in the circumstances, for whatever reason, she's saying, look, I don't want anybody here. Because I know older people who are like that. They feel comfortable enough in their own space. They want to go nowhere else. She may feel in her own head that she's capable of looking after the husband, but she may not.
I think she needs to be assessed, to be honest.
Well, so you're gonna need to look for some assistance in dealing with that. What I would suggest, in terms of trying to get guidance, I may be able to ask someone in government to indicate where you could go with that, and they can then tell you whether you need legal advice as well. Okay, so just leave your contact details.
I'm worried because of the situation, whereas
I understand.
He was on medication, and he hasn't hit since 2018. I went to the polyclinic in Warrens, and his wife has been saying that he's been attended by a doctor, and the doctor has no recognition of my father at all.
So you need to leave your contact details with the producer, and let me see what we can do to assist you in that regard. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello, Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well.
Okay. I'm just calling to thank the Kureit Hospital, accident and emergency, on behalf of my sister. She had COVID lung infection, and at the Harrison Point, she said that it was well taken care of. She just wants to say thanks to both the hospital and the person that runs the Harrison Point.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yes. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis, and good morning to everyone who can hear my voice.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. I got a question to ask. I heard on your news, on VOB, the station newscast this morning, Mr. Gordon Reddick, it was saying about the pop-up venues where people went over the weekend and got their injection, a jab, and it was well attended with about 1,000 persons or so. Now, my question is, I want to know, was this advertised? Where was it advertised and when? Because if they are saying there is a pop-up one, and they believe that a lot of people want this injection, which I do believe a lot of people want and should get, I mean, only 1,000 people, and they say it was well attended. So my concern is, I myself would have glad to know of it, and I didn't. So if it is being advertised, and if this advertisement is only played on a particular radio station, I feel a main person should know. So my concern is, if pertaining to the jobs, and you're going to have many more to come, or anything like that as a pop-up centers, I believe among myself and other persons who were waiting still on the appointments would like to know, so we can listen out and probably try to bypass waiting on the appointment section, because it surprised me a lot this morning when I heard the news about it. You know, okay. Of it? You heard of it?
No, I'm unaware of it. But the point you're making is one for more publicity or wider publicity of any pop-up centers that they have for this purpose. So that seems reasonable to me.
So tell me, was it advertised?
I can't tell you. I don't know.
You can't tell me. So I am wondering then, if it was only for, if they were saying, well, this was for, you know, certain workers or people or anything like that, I can understand that. Man, but it really, you know, it surprised me. And only 1,000 people in there saying it's still well attended. So that pop-up thing like didn't really work, because it wasn't probably, as you say, well advertised, and it should have been. So, you know, I just put it out there. So if I am wrong and it was well advertised, I apologize, but I would like to know when it was advertised, on which station it was on, so I can probably try to get two radios and turn all two at the same time and listen for it. Thank you, Mr. Ellis, for listening.
Okay, thank you very much, too. I wanted to extend my condolences to Pat Watts, the mother of Melanie Watts, who died at the weekend as a result of an accident in Christchurch. Pat Watts is somebody that I've spoken to over a number of years, somebody who's been very, she was a public worker, public sector worker, and was in the area of social welfare work for many years, very articulate and passionate about that area of work. And, you know, I'm really saddened to hear of the passing of her young daughter. But it again brings to mind this whole problem that we are facing in a country where, as you all heard, every time they issued a statement about who was dead from COVID, they reminded you that they had comorbidities, you remember? And it came across as though, you know, they didn't say it in those terms, but at times you could get the impression that, you know, these people were not as careful as they should have been. So they got comorbidities and then they died from COVID. That's how I interpreted it at points. But it's a country that has been emphasizing to a great extent the importance of people getting up and exercising and trying to reduce the incidence of these non-communicable diseases. For many people, writing provides them with that outlet. Other people tend to run, other people walk. Based on what's happening on the streets of this country, I fear walking, running, and riding on the streets of Barbados. I strongly recommend that far more attention needs to be paid to providing spaces for people to exercise or to encourage people to use the spaces that exist. If you look at these centers that we have all across this country, I would like you to tell me to what extent you believe that the playing fields around these centers are actually being utilized. Many of them are empty for the entire day. I think that that's one first step in trying to take Barbados and Barbadians along a path to trying to get off the streets of this country to exercise. But you know, I also feel it's contradictory to tell people to exercise to avoid comorbidities. And for no good reason, explain to us, the curfew ends at 6, when so many people need to get up and out at 5 to go and exercise. I don't know whose brilliant idea that was, but since they haven't told us why it has to end at 6 rather than at 5, I can only assume that they're holding that brilliant reason to their bosoms. But it does not accord with the whole concept of trying to encourage Barbadians to get out there and to be far more active. But more than anything else, I think we need to encourage people to use the existing spaces and to adapt existing spaces for this particular purpose. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Welcome to the program.